want to tune in and pay attention to new research by Christian Gross. I recently spoke with this Vanderbilt political scientist about how oratory can trump beliefs for many voters.
The main findings were that the effect of rhetoric on voter decision-making is actually pretty important. So most people realize that party identification, issue positions that candidates have, that drives voter decision-making. We also wanted to find out, does how a candidate speak, are they good speakers, do they inspire voters, are they the kinds of candidates who are using complex rhetoric, do these things have an impact on vote choice? And we find out that rhetoric has a big impact on vote choice. And often voters who prefer rhetoric will sometimes vote against their issue preferences. And what that means is, for instance, Ronald Reagan came up as a very good speaker in terms of presidential candidates. We look at 1976 to the present. Reagan was an excellent speaker, very good with rhetoric. A number of voters who were moderate to liberal, who didn't necessarily agree with him on all the issues, voted for him anyways because he was such a good speaker and such a good candidate in terms of connecting with voters.
What prompted this study?
The study, we were interested in trying to find out what qualities that candidates have cause voters to vote for a candidate or the other. Most of the research is focused on the importance of party. Most research is focused on the importance of issue positions. But we know that people vote because they like a candidate, they don't like a candidate, how the candidate comes off on TV. But there wasn't really any sort of serious measures about the speaking, sort of how do they speak and how good of a quality is the speaking. The other thing we're interested in is what kinds of voters were moved by rhetoric. So another one of the findings was the most highest educated voters, so people who have college degrees, people who have professional degrees, they're the ones that are swayed and persuaded by campaign rhetoric the most, which is kind of ironic because if you think about it, the most educated people arguably may choose on issues while less informed, lower educated people might not vote on issues. It turns out that higher educated people vote against their issue positions and for people who have persuasive rhetoric. So we wanted to look at what were the kinds of qualities that caused people to vote for a candidate beyond issues and what types of voters were more likely to vote on rhetoric.
Do you think that rhetoric is a lot more important in this age of television than, say, it was back in the 40s and 50s when television was just starting?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was another motivation of the study is in the TV age, we have presidential debates, we have speeches, we have sound bites. How a candidate appears is really important. And one of the key components of how they appear is how they talk and what they look like when they're speaking. And can they complete, you know, sentences? Can they talk in a way that inspires or moves people? This is the sort of thing that prior to the TV age, we might not have seen the importance of rhetoric for every single voter. A candidate, you know, prior to TV, radio was important, but even prior to radio, voters might have gone to see candidates speak in person, but that's not going to be most voters. Most voters are going to be deciding on other issues. But with the rise of television in particular, the voice of the candidate, how the candidate comes off, how the candidate speaks makes a big difference.
The Nixon-Kennedy debate was obviously considered a big reason that Kennedy could have won the election, although after that, I don't think there were debates for several years, were there?
Right. The first TV debates was Kennedy-Nixon and then none until 1976. And so that's why our study looks at 76 to 2004. Nixon didn't do well on TV because he was sweating and he didn't appear very good. Though if you listen to him on the radio, the argument was that he did very well. So TV debates were something that candidates were concerned about after 1960. Starting with 1976, TV debates have become part of the general election, and that's why we started with 1976, saying how did the candidates sound and what did they say above and beyond what the content of their positions were during the debates.
So what are the implications for this study with our three remaining presidential candidates?
Yeah, I think there's some – first of all, we haven't measured – the quality of the speech for the three candidates that are remaining, but we're going to do that. But there are some definite implications. If you just look at John McCain on the Republican side, arguably he's not as good of a speaker as probably either Obama or Hillary Clinton. If you had to rank the Democrats, Obama almost certainly would be the best speaker. He's an excellent speaker, very much in terms of the inspiration and the charisma. He's good on that. And then Clinton, I would say, is nowhere near as good as Obama, but probably a little bit better than McCain. McCain tends to read straight from paper when he's speaking. He doesn't have the sort of he doesn't have the charisma anywhere near Obama, but not even Clinton. But so if you imagine, let's just do a matchup. Let's say it's Obama versus McCain in the fall. Obama's got the advantage on the rhetoric. He speaks much better. McCain is much more moderate than Obama is. Obama's, you know, depending on the study, is the most liberal member of the Senate. McCain is a conservative, but not the most conservative member of the Senate. So on issues, most voters will be with McCain. On rhetoric and inspiration, most voters will be with Obama. What does that mean? Hard to predict. It's going to be close, and McCain will want to go after Obama for being too extreme, because the more extreme you are, the less impact rhetoric will have. Obama will want to go after McCain for not being charismatic and not being inspirational. If it's Clinton versus McCain, it's a little bit different, because I think the rhetoric advantage there is nowhere near as large with Clinton, maybe a marginal advantage on rhetoric. She's slightly more moderate, though, than Obama is. She's still liberal, but not the most liberal member of the Senate. And then it might be more of a campaign about issues and less about rhetoric and who's more extreme and who's more moderate, with both McCain and Clinton arguing potentially that they're more moderate. So I think depending on who the Democratic nominee is, the impact of rhetoric could make a huge difference or maybe won't have that big of a deal.
Why do the highly educated voters prefer the complex rhetoric? Do you think it's just what they've gotten used to?
Right. The one thing I forgot to mention is how we measured complex rhetoric. So I don't know. I'll talk about that a little bit. We used this measure called Flesch-Kincaid, which was invented by the Department of Defense to try to measure how clear people write or speak and how sophisticated it is. And it's on a grade level pattern. The average American understands and can read or hear at an eighth grade level. And the candidates ranged from a seventh to over a 12th grade level in terms of speaking complexity. So why do higher educated voters prefer speaking complexity? Because those are the ones who have college degrees. Those are the ones who, you know, in their professional lives are, you know, speaking themselves complexly, are the ones that use big words, you might say. They're kind of candidates who speak complexly or speaking the language of higher educated voters. So who are, going back to Obama and Clinton just in the Democratic primary, who's supporting Obama primarily? One of his core base groups is professional elites, you know, professors and lawyers and academics and that kind of group. Why do they like him? He's one of them. He speaks in these sort of inspirational tones with really complex language and high levels of rhetoric that are complex. That's what, you know, people, professors hear on the hallways when they're talking. Who's not on board with Obama yet? Lower educated, more working class voters, those sorts of voters, working class white voters, those sorts of voters don't speak in as complex of a language, and it sounds more elitist. It doesn't sound like the kind of language used to connect. And so I think that's the underlying mechanism between education and the impact of the vote.
With Reagan, did he use more complex rhetoric? And I guess maybe we didn't always realize it, because some people I know would sort of make fun of him as being this, you know, grade B actor.
Right. Reagan, if you think about it on first blush, you would think, well, Reagan, sort of the impression of him is not that smart, not that complex. In reality, when you go back and look at how he spoke, he came up as one of the highest on our scale. Depending on the year he ran in, both 80 and 84, he was coming in at around a 12th grade speaking level. Very complex. He used a lot of clauses. He knew how to connect with people. He didn't speak in a way that was simple. And it was clear. It was clear, and people liked it and were inspired by it, but it was not simple at all. In contrast, one of the people who came up lowest on the scale was Ross Perot, who ran as a third-party candidate. His speaking came in at about the seventh grade level, and that was his style. It was very short, very simple. So compare a Perot to a Reagan, you can see Reagan was actually very complex.
And even if someone was a highly successful business person, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're a complex speaker.
Oh, right. Yeah. Perot's style, I think he would say himself, was to try to be simple and to try to reach at the type of voter who would prefer a shorter sentence. It's just that the evidence suggests that higher educated voters are moved by complex rhetoric and lower educated voters don't have much of a preference on rhetoric.
Does this study have any implications for people in other fields? I suppose in sales, if you're trying to get people to buy something, maybe you should make your rhetoric kind of be appealing.
Right. I think this has a lot of implications for other fields. So, yeah, if you're in the business field, you're trying to persuade someone, there's two dimensions you persuade them on. Your product is good. That by itself, that's similar to issue congruence. And you speak well, you speak clearly, you speak in a way that connects with the person that you're talking to. Being able to do both of those is going to help you with sales. And I think it applies to all sorts of fields even beyond that. Anything where someone's in the position to try to persuade someone to do something where there's an actual quality component of the speech that you use for persuasion, and there's a quality component for the product that you're selling, be that a candidate or an actual product in a business environment.
And you said that you do plan to analyze the rhetoric for our three remaining candidates?
This study is just on the general election, so we're waiting to see if it's going to be Obama or Clinton. And then once the Democratic nominee is determined, we're going to do the same analysis for 2008 and add that to the existing analysis.
Christian Gross is an assistant professor of political science at Vanderbilt. For Interview, I'm Emory Dear Owens.